Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yes, I've just gone 7:51 on Central African time. At that time of the morning, where we join our very own Councillor Ahmed Parak on his segment, Straight Talk and Kafan Dafan. Ahmed, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful Sunday morning?
And to all our radio listeners, alhamdulillah, beautiful Saturday morning, Sunday morning, today, Shabbat, alhamdulillah, Shabbat.
Well, when I spoke to you, you were on your trip to Ingoma. Did you stay over or you're back home, Ahmed?
Shabbat, alhamdulillah, I came back last night around about 8:30 last night at home, Shabbat.
Before we get into your kalgozari about Ingoma, let's talk about Kafan Dafan. What's the latest, Ahmed?
Shabbat, alhamdulillah, you know, we're fortunate enough that we don't have any major problem or anything. There's one or two incidents we had for post-mortem Friday. Yesterday we had one. But both bodies were post-mortems were done, alhamdulillah. There's no issues or anything like that. But we're still fighting the Department of Health and Justice Department for the documentation so that we'll be able to roll out and see what they are saying, if we can introduce the first state-of-the-art X-ray machine. So we haven't heard from them. So inshallah, we should be hearing from them shortly to see where we are going on that matter, Shabbat.
You know, Ahmed, a lot of shooting take place, and people were talking to me and they said, "Hey, Shafin, the next time you speak to Councillor Ahmed Parak, tell him to describe to us, you know, when people are shot in the face or in the body and all, how the autopsy is done and how the bullet is taken out." Perhaps you could, describe that to the listeners this morning, Ahmed.
Shafat, first and foremost, for our listeners, firstly, you get two types of death. One you get is a natural causes, what we call a natural death, and then the other one is unnatural. Anything to do with unnatural, that is, you know, your roof came down at your house, or you got shot, or you got poked with a knife, or you got burned in a fire, or you got drowned, or an accident. Anything is unnatural. So the law states in this country and most countries in the world as well that you have to do a post-mortem. They want to know the cause of death, what is actually happened when the roof came down, or an accident, whose fault it was, how it happened. So this is where the government have to do the post-mortem. The Department of Health, they will do the post-mortem. There's two elements to the post-mortem. One is the facility is three, actually. One, the facility is with Public Works, the property owned by Public Works. The second entity is Department of Health, who used this facility. And the third aspect is the Department of Justice. They only supply the doctors for the post-mortem. So it is an independent body that they only supply the Department of Health with the doctors. So the doctors will then come out and do a post-mortem. When the post-mortem is done, obviously, we open from the neck right up to your navel, which we call a rib cage. We open that up. We take all the organs out. We weigh the organs, and then all the organs are put back, and your skull is opened up to say whether you had a brain hemorrhage or whatever you had, and if there is a gunshot. Now, that is a very, very tricky one, the question that you have asked. If there is three bullet holes in that body, and what we call through and through, so if a guy was shot from the front, and then you must have an exit point. So two, we have exit point, and the third one, there was no exit point. So now the doctor has to now look for the bullet, because now through and through means the bullet went through to your body and came out from the other side. But if the bullet went on the third one and there was no exit point, so then he has to look for that bullet, because that bullet must be. Then that's when our delays and everything comes in a post-mortem, because there was no through and through. So that we have to look. And then sometimes with these new bullets, they're using hollow points and all that. These bullets, when it goes into your body, it becomes like small pieces of metal you'll find right through. It gets broken into, that bullet is broken into pieces. But most cases, you'll find the bullet. Now, I can tell you, we had an incident that a person passed away here, and we had to take that body to Port Jefferson, if I remember clearly. It was many years ago. And we did everything, and then the doctor insists, no. We have now got two, actually there were six bullet holes, and we managed to get four, and the two. Shafat, we went by another hour and a half. People are waiting because the janaza namaz, you know, on my understanding, normally post-mortem takes at least an hour and a half. I told him, it's okay. The doctor will come at 12. By 1:30, the body will be ready, stitching, washing. The hearse can leave here at 2 o'clock. By Asaf time, we'll be ready. So far, we ran about 1.5 hours late. So the body only left here around about 3:30. And Asar is 4 o'clock there. So that is a problem it becomes. So that's why we make it very, very clear to the people. Do not set the time unless when the body has been released from the mortuary, then only release the time, because people come out and they're waiting and waiting. And this, they don't realize there is a stumbling block from the mortuary. Something and something might come up, and that's where we get into trouble. And that's the reason why we say to the people, do not set the time unless you have got the green light from the undertaker, the burial society, to say, okay, we are leaving now, then we can set up the time. That's the only thing we can do, because people set the time and then makes a big problem for us, because people then come and tell us, you know what, you all told us, sir, 4 o'clock, we came all the way from Durban. You know, we have to go back. That, you know, how everything starts. So the long and the short is, that's what happens in a post-mortem. So sometimes you do get delays in post-mortem. Sometimes the doctor is a district surgeon. A district surgeon is not fully employed by the Department of Health. He is on a part-time basis. He goes to his surgery, and then he comes to do the post-mortem. And that's where we always have a delay in cases. So my take is that, you know, people need to understand these things are not in our hands. You know, although I might be a counselor, yes, I've got influence. I can do my utmost best, but it's not in my hand. In these post-mortem issues, that you will always find some technicality, some problems, some hidden issues that we have to then look for it. And in some cases, the investigating officer said, you do not start the post-mortem till I'm there. So if he's got three other places to go, and then he comes to the mortuary 4 hours later, there's nothing we can do. That's the rule. If he says he wants to be there because he's handling the case, because this is a high-profile murder case, he has to be there. There's nothing we can do, Shafat. Shafat, the main one from all what I've just heard from Sulaiman Yusuf was the France issue, and this is going to be a major, you know, for them to have 45,000 police force there to curtail the unrest they have got, and they got plus minus 5,000 arrests already in France there. This is just the beginning of what's going to happen in France. You know, this thing, they have been boiling for many, many years now. Now they're going to see the other side of the people. The unrest is not going to stop. It's going to flare into the other cities as well. I can, that's what I've been reading for yesterday as well as this morning. And this thing is going to be a major problem that the president of France is going to be expecting in the next couple of weeks, coming years. So this is a massive, massive unrest that is going to be taking place there, because now they want justice in every, and you see in Western countries too, there's always problem there. Kenya has got problem. All, everywhere you saw, what is happening is just everywhere bubbling up at the moment. And you know, if they don't do something about it, because there's always division in government, there's always religious issues, that what they want justice, and this is where the government is not listening, and this is how it's going to happen now, because people have to go out onto the street, and that's where then only the government. Now, he had to cancel his trip to go to Germany just because of this unrest and all that, because he knows what's going to happen. This thing is not going to be just put off today. he's going to run for the weekend, you'll see what's going to happen, Yeshua.
No, good point indeed, Ahmed. And, you know, or look at France. You know, it was a very Islamophobic country, and a lot of Algerian and Moroccan Muslims there, living there as citizens now. You know, Karim Benzema is also of the Algerian descent there. Perhaps he could be talking to Macron and say, you know, don't treat the Muslims this way. But really looking at Europe, you know, Ahmed, the rise of Islam. I mean, it's a prediction by the year 2060. You know, 50% or 51% of Europe and America will be a Muslim majority. Your thoughts on that, Ahmed?
Shafat, you know, I've been always saying Islam is going to be the fastest religion. The Muslims will rise to all over the world. And this is what our Quran says. One day we will take over the world. And this is coming to it. That's why...
Yes, Muslims, sir.
The Islam is going to be a very fastest religion in the world. And this is what's happening at the moment. And people are, you know, people are coming to us, white, blacks, all different nationalities are coming because they're seeing what is the truth, Shafat. Important thing is when they see what is haq, and they can see how people only making, the West is only painting that we are terrorists, but we are not terrorists, anything. Our Islam teaches you justice, and that's where people now realize that, you know, this is the only religion that we know that is justice, and that's why they are coming to Islam.
Alhamdulillah, yes. You know what Boniface does? After, you know, when we have our shows, they record it, and then they make the podcast, and Amber knows what the podcast is, and then we give it to her. He's busy making a podcast, and we just heard a little of that here. Yes, Amber, looking at Itikweni, and what's the latest on the Itikweni, Franza? But before you talk about Itikweni, I was in Goma.
Shafat, yesterday we had a very, voter registration, and then we had a massive tournament. It was one of the players, ex-professional players. He hosted a massive soccer tournament there, and we felt that it was appropriate for us to get involved in terms of sponsorship and assist in that region, because we picked up 10.2% in that region, and people are coming every day. We are signing up people to come and join Action SA. So therefore, we found it appropriate for us to go there and assist this professional player who was playing for Wits, and he has now brought in a lot of youths, and I was shocked the amount of... We had something like about 1,200 people there in that stadium. It was choking, Shafat. And what we achieved there, we signed up a lot of people that want to join the party, and that was the beauty part of this whole thing, that when this thing came through to my desk, they said, this is what we want to do. I did the I analyzed everything. I said, who is the professional player? Knowing football, I found out properly what capacity he's got, how good he was on the field, what value he's going to bring to Action SA, what value he's going to bring to the people of Nongoma, how the people are going to follow him, how they're going to join him in his professional rank. And from a rural area, he went and played for Wits University, and he was a professional player. So how many what talents we got in that area, in Zululand alone? Shafat, you'll be shocked what I saw there. Yeah. You know, these guys were, you know, youngsters, and the ball control, and the, you know, what I seen, it was unbelievable. So I said, there's an opportunity it was for us to sponsor much, whatever we could do, they respond to them and everything. And we saw for ourselves, and the people saw what Action SA brought to them. And that is where you bring people together. In sports, you bring all different nationalities, different people together. When they see, that's how you pick up votes, you pick up you bring people together, you know, and it was very important, and that's what we did. And we were very successful to get 1,200 people on one day. It was very, very fruitful for us, for me to go there. And, you know, I was I'm the director of operations. I put this whole thing together. And fortunately, I got the response last night from the chair and from National that what a tournament that we have staged there in Nongoma.
Absolutely, Ahmed. As you said, you know, it was a very fruitful trip for you. And also, you know, when you're looking at the municipality, they already, I think the rates are going to go up, and people still making a big hue and cry about that and said, you know what, you haven't given us a service delivery. You know, we are, the COVID has closed many of our businesses and so forth. And here you are, you are just, I mean, the government, Ramaphosa himself has given a 3% increase to MPs and also ministers and judges. Yeah. The prices, the increases are coming the top end, but the bottom end, nothing's happening. Ahmed, talk to us.
So first and foremost, you know, rate increase is an annual thing, whether you like it or you don't like it. I'm against rate increases for the last 2-3 years. I've been always objecting, and I've been, when I came into to municipality as a councillor, I was the first one to introduce to all our people. I said, pay if you were a, if you're a householder, pay your 630 rand and object. If you're a business and you are a big corporate business and you got massive properties and all that, pay the 6,000 rand. Doesn't matter. Long as you put an objection, they have to listen to you. That is the long and the short. And I've done that, and we were successful. This thing has to come before a full panel, and they have to, once you give your sequence of events, why from year to year, how the increase has been going, and that you build up a case, and they have to now listen to you. So that's where we are at this moment in time. But throughout the country, in all 9 provinces, increases take place. But unfortunately, in our city, the highest increase took place here is 18.45%, and that is a problem. And that is where we're saying, and I totally agree with the people on the ground. They are frustrated, they are fuming. They say, why should we pay rates and with a rate increase as of 1st of July when there is no service delivery? There is, we got potholes, we got electricity problem, we have got sanitation and water, we got problems in every sector. You guys, you're taking our money and you're not repairing, you're not servicing our infrastructure. People are prepared to pay, but they are prepared to pay when there is infrastructure, there's work is taking place, the things are happening in the city, that, you know, your bins are being picked up on a regular basis, your verges are being cut by parks, your grounds are, every year you've got to top your grounds up with compost, and all that is being taken place. Your gold mouths must be painted. All that has to be done, but nothing is being done. When you find nothing is being done, and you now, in people are insisting, the council is insisting that you need to pay your rates. Now, you know, they've been so sharp and clever in this whole episode. What they did is, they took your electricity bill, they took your water bill, and they took your rate bill. They amalgamated it together in one. So previously, people used to pay the light and the water, and they were not paying the rates because for service delivery. Now, you haven't paid your rate. Although you paid your lights and water, they still come and cut you off. So that's how sharp they got. And what they've been doing also, they're loading it because they know people are not paying. They're paying late and all that. So they're loading what you're supposed to pay, and they're doing an average. Yet you were not there. You haven't used enough electricity, power, or anything. They just load you up in all these three segments, your rates, water, and light. They load it. And if 9 out of 10, you're not going to go to the Itiquini and sit down there for the day and go from one chair to another. By the time you come to the main guy there to give your whole complaint, to take he takes your notes down there, and you have already got 2 tickets for your car downstairs. And then also, if you diabetes and all that, you need to eat and all that. You say, you know, enough is enough. I'm here from 7:30, 11:30, I'm still sitting here, I'm gone. So people come there and they go away, they wasted the day, and end of the day, nothing happened. So that's what happens here. They're still paying what they're supposed to pay. They're over the limit they are paying, and that's where the frustration is coming. Now that's where our big problem is. We now have to, therefore, we put all the ratepayers to associations together. We want to bring a high court application. That move we have already started with the Westville Ratepayers Association in Westville. We want to see, we will latch on with them, with the other ratepayers, to see how their papers are drawn. And from there, we want to see how we to take this the city on. Because end of the day, if you're not going to do it, they're not going to give us anything back. So the people on the ground, I don't blame them. They are fuming. They are they had, in layman's language, they are cut full of everything. They say, we are not prepared to pay unless you give us service delivery.
Yes, Ahmed, I'm looking at a message here from Mohammed. He says, Assalamu alaikum, Brother Shafat Ahmed Khan and Councillor Ahmed Parak. A great segment indeed. I do not miss it for anything. May I ask Councillor Ahmed Parak, why do CPFs do most of the work that the municipality is doing? They take care of the verges, they take care of the community, they do the security, and they're also checking up for leaks and so forth. Shouldn't the municipality pay them a salary instead of we as ratepayers, we have to pay our CPF security and give a contribution monthly? Surely, Ahmed, this is unfair. Maybe you can whisper in the ear and bring about a drastic change. Your municipality should pay the CPFs. What's your thoughts on that? Your response to Mohammed, Ahmed?
To respond to Mohammed is, Shahar, the CPF is normally actually supposed to be more for security purposes and all that. Then the Ratepayers Association, like if you come to Musgrave, we have put up our own team that is from the Ratepayers Association. We charge 360 rands a year. That's rand a day. We charge, we got about 6 or 7 boys. They got a driver, they got a bucky. They clean all the roads from the Musgrave, St. Thomas, right up to from right on the top. From there, right up to Curry Road. So, North Ridge Road, right up to Curry Road. So, the people paying for that. Mohammed is right. This work supposed to be done by the municipality. Why should we be paying? Why should we be paying rates and pay this Ratepayers Association, CTF, for mainly for the security and all that? Now, if we're not going to do it, Shafat, nobody's going to do it. Secondly, wherever Mohammed is staying, if he's not going to put what he's putting from his pocket to make sure that the people around him, his street is clean, he's got security and all that, the value of his house is going to go down. And if the value of his house goes down, then if he paid 1 million rand and the value now is 1.5 million, he will still get 1 million for his house. So that is, you have to look after the value of your house, because if you're not going to do it, the infrastructure falls, then nobody wants to. If you put your house up for sale, you're not going to get the price. That is the reason in Musgrave, we made sure that we brought in the ratepayers. First thing I did was form the Ratepayers Association. Then we said to them, right, put a team together. You're not going to get from the council. Then you go to the council. And what we did after that, we went to the council. We said, this is an infrastructure we have got. How can you exist? Then they said, okay, DSW will come twice a week to pick up for you all clean it up, have those bags ready, they will pick it up, and whatever roads and all that, we got a team that goes on, take the name of the road, where the potholes, take the photograph of it, and then we got a cluster manager in this area who we report to and tell him we want A, B, C, D, E, and F. If the electricity, you take the phone numbers, and then you write up to the electricity department with the cluster manager. This has been not done. That's what has to be done. This is how you have to do things, Shabbat.
Yes, Ahmed. And then the point made is that at a CPF, you know, in the community, only a third pay, and, you know, lots of them don't pay the subscriptions. What happens then, Ahmed? Isn't that unfair?
Shafat, you know, in Kingo Beach, we started everywhere, Shafat. Now, this is the apathy of our people. That's the biggest problem we have. The people that, you know, really care of your road, care of your area, they will pay. But the other thing, why should we pay? And then when you call them out, when there is a disaster or anything, everybody else will come there. Then the guy will say, you know what, I'm paying these guys. Why should I go out on the road and stand and join them and all that? That is an apathy. It's a bad way of thinking. If you know, you need to get involved in everything. That's how you know me, Shafat, and I've got involved with anything. Anything where good is going to take place, I put my foot in there. I go and give them assistance. I guide them. I said, do this, do that. If you need, I can help you with this. I can help you with that. And that's how you go and get things done. And when you, everyone mobilized in from your own area, take like Hussein Mullah. He's a vocal guy in Spingo Beach. Now, he's a go-getter like me. He will make things happen. He will go and speak to the department. I want that. Things will start happening, you know, roads. You know, if you go to Spingo Beach, all the potholes are sorted out. Things are happening because you got somebody and the people rally around that person and assist him to get things moving. And that's how you'll find you get your work done, Shafan.
Yeah, looking at this message, Dawood says, Assalamu alaikum. Great chat indeed, brother Shafat Ahmad Khan and Ahmad Parak. Please, Ahmad Parak, audits are done for all the municipalities and 90% have failed the audits. I want to know about Itikweni, the audit. How is it? Did it fail the audit? But I don't see their balance sheet in public. Why is that so, Ahmad?
Shafat, our balance sheet, yes, our balance sheet was out about 2-3 months ago. Yes, we integrated the balance sheet. There was a lot of wasteful expenditure that we picked up. It was went into a couple of millions. And then that's where the SAU has already stepped in. We have now asked SAU, we want a fully fledged report. We suspended the deputy city manager. There's a lots of people in the city have been already suspended. We are not playing. We are going full out with the IFP, DA, and some of the smaller parties that joined us. We are making sure that we want accountability and we want to know where that money went. And that is very, very important. People need to go behind bars. They have to go behind bars. End of the day, the long and the short is they have taken the ratepayers' money and they have to account for it. And that's where we are. And we are saying to the city manager, the mayor, how can you got an audit system in our municipality, how this thing happened. So we even brought an application a couple of months ago to remove him. Fortunately, he survived there because of EFF. But, you know, the game is still not over yet because we are still looking into more things in the council that has to be done. And if he's not going to account, he has to step down. You need to get somebody who will be able to accountable. The mayor has got the right to give us the right information and is answerable to the people of the city what happened.
Maksud says, Assalamu alaikum, Chef and Munro. I know you both. You both know me. Munro, is it true that the DSW in the Spingo area only has one pickup truck for the waste? It's breaking down every second day. But now I notice that the one truck you got is working quite well. How do you respond to Max there? To Maksud, Ahmad?
Shafat, in the last financial year, I know they were running out of some trucks because went for repairs and some went met an accident. They have brought in new vehicles and they have outsourced some of the work to get in trucks to assist them. So we are on top of that. In fact, we get a monthly report from all the departments where there's a problem, and then we look into that. So there is a problem in some of the departments, but they have already brought in, outsourced some of the work, so it should be back to normal.
This is a message from Shokat. He says, Assalamu alaikum, Ahmad. I've noticed there's a lot of problems in Orient Park and Lotus Park and also some of our other roads where water is being wasted, especially if you come to Spingo Hills and you look at James Avenue, water's gushing like it's like a river mouth. Why is so much water being wasted, Ahmad?
Shafat, when it comes to water, we're losing 51% of our water consumption with leaks on roads and everything else. There's nothing nobody can do. You see, Shafat, if you do not service your car, what happens to your car? You start jerking, then you will have problems with this gear metallic thing, you will have carburetor problem, you will have various problems in the thing. In the same thing, in the last 15 years, no service was done to all the infrastructure, especially pipes and everything. Now, and they have used, at that time, they're using copper pipes and everything, not copper, the corrugated pipes. And everything. So So that's where the problem. These pipes are rusted so badly. If you got a hairline fracture on that pipe, or you got a small leak, and with the pressure that water comes, now it goes through that pipe there, and that blows that pipe up. Then you fix that. Then it opens up somewhere else. So the whole entire city has to be refitted with pipes. In fact, the sewage pipe has to be done, the water pipes, because they also got not only the old corrugated pipes, they also got asbestos pipes. Now, asbestos, over the years, with the pressure and everything, it does crack. And if you haven't maintained it, and that's where the problem is. So we have already started in some areas. We say, no, you can't keep patching. They have to, if they got 15 meters, they take the full 15 meters, they open up, and they put a complete new line. And that's where we're going to be able to save money. But it's going to be a long, drawn process. It might take into, it will run up to 2025. And that's what we have got here on the drawing board. And there's a new system that they have come from Germany, and they're looking into it, where they come with some international, they got some pumps, international company, some pumps, and they can detect all your leaks and everything. So that's where they are looking at it, and we were hoping to see how that system is going to work and make sure that all our systems are put to use, because we're losing like a couple of billions of rand annually only on water consumption.
Yeah, there it can be had so much of rains that still the dam levels are not so high. Yeah, you 51% of water we are losing all the time, Ahmed. Now, you talk about this new pipes are being laid. Are they plastic pipes, very thick gauge and so forth? And how long, what's the lifespan of pipes like these, Ahmed?
Shafat, they have come up with the new pipes, and this is going to give you a 15-year lifespan. But it got a cleaning system that is, it can be flushed out and everything with proper manholes. And that is going to be, for long term, this is going to be our solution. And let's hope, inshallah, this thing works for us, because to lose 51% of water consumption in the city is a lot of money. You know, it's the taxpayers' money. Every way you'll see, you know, you're finding all those big water that we are lost on a day-to-day basis. Is the money that we're throwing away every single day. It's like, you know what, you're opening your tap and say, there's money, take it. That's what is happening at the moment.
You know, Ahmed, I'm looking at a message here from Rashid, and he says, since 1994, Ahmed Parak, the ANC had taken power, and they had all these powerful metros under their control. What were they doing with all the rates and tax money? Were they just having a party and a jol instead of looking at of maintaining infrastructure? Look at what has happened now. Surely they are held responsible. Surely they are culpable. That's a powerful statement by Rashid there, Ahmed.
Rashid, yeah, I agree with Rashid, what he's saying. From 94, 20 years, 29 years later, nothing has changed. You know what I mean? They haven't done anything in terms of infrastructure. He's 100% right. But at the same time, we might need to remind our Rashid and all our listeners that if you put the right people in government, then you can hold them accountable. You can hold them accountable for whatever you have put them there. Because now people, over the years, they said, no, we're not going to vote, this, that, they had such, you know, they say nothing is going to happen. We, you know, ANC, what they can do and all. But if you get a proper opposition, a good opposition with all the parties coming together, and then you have a good coalition government, which is going to happen in the 24 election, it will change. Things will start happening, because there's, you know, Shafat, there's so much of money in this country. The foreign nationals are coming here in this country. They're making gold money here. It's a minting machine here in this country. Why? You are here for many years. You were born and brought up here. I'll take you to some of these people, Shafat. You will fall on your back. He will tell you, I'm here only for 20 years. I got, this building is mine. This warehouse is mine. I'm driving a Mercedes-Benz. My children goes to private school. They came here. If they can make it, why we couldn't make it? Because the thing is this, we could first and foremost, we had to get ourselves organized in terms of getting ourselves registered. Secondly, the opportunities were there. We always turn back, I don't know, for whatever reason, instead of saying, you know what, opportunities are there, but we don't tackle the opportunity. We don't read government gazette. We don't see what tenders are coming through. We don't even bother. You know, you don't need money to make money. You need to be just read and see. There's an opportunity come in a small scale with people started home industries. They saw how they're making ice cream. Shafat, today it's a massive industry. People making samosas. Today, how many people? They're self-sufficient. People are going and buying houses and all from a home industry because they are prepared to work and they see there's an opportunity. They're going for that opportunity. Now, if you see an opportunity, you don't do anything about it. You don't need money. You just need to have the willpower to say, okay, I'm going for this. Let's see what happens. And then, you know, Allah opens doors because you're making manat there. You say, there's an opportunity. I'm going and doing it. And Allah opens the door. And in no time, you've got a super business. Now you're employing for 4 to 10 people in the small industry.
Then there's a complaint from, you know, born South African businessmen that say, yeah, we legally registered, we pay our license fees and so forth. But then the UIF comes in and, you know, the unions get in there and government passes certain laws that makes it virtually impossible for us to run our business, you know, like in a legal term or according to, you know, according to what the paper says or the red tape and so forth. But as you talk about these, you know, foreigners coming here, no, they don't register. They go maybe to one dorpi, and they're virtually making millions. And then the criminal elements are targeting them. You know, most of the kidnappings that are taking place is at these dorpis where they go for these businessmen. And as you said, they're churning out millions. What's your thoughts on that, Ahmad?
Shafat, the first question. There is, you're saying PAYUIFNL. You know, I have fought one of the biggest case in a landmark case in the country, in the clothing industry, right? And we converted. Today, it will cost you less than 500-600 rand. Go and form a small cooperative. Get 3-4 people. They can't touch you. They can't do you anything. Because end of the day, cooperative means you're working for yourself. Just register yourself for UIF and PAYE. Now, you might employ people. PAYE is mainly so that you pay the government so that you can get the money back and all that. That's in the UIF as well. So you can, that is the reason. So it's a small amount. It's not because you're under the threshold because you are a small industry. That is the very first important thing. So the red tape are there, but I know factories in Chatsworth, Phoenix, in Essekebe, Newcastle, in Ladysmith and all that. Massive factories, they are cooperative. The Department of Labor comes there, Department of Bargaining Council comes there. They said, you know what? There we are. We are a cooperative. This is a cooperative. They are working for themselves and their payroll and everything. They have a look at it. Cooperative is sharing. So whatever they make there, they share it among themselves. And this is how it's working. It's working like a charm in most factories all over Chatsworth, Phoenix, and all that. I'm the first one that introduced it to the system, and it's working. There's no bargaining council. They can't come and harass them or anything. They harass them. I tell them, go to CCMA. We tell them, there's our paperwork here. Let the prosecutor, the commissioner, rule on that. And 9 out of 10, when they walk out from there, they say, no, it's a cooperative. The books are according to how a cooperative must run. And that's it. It's got its own constitution as well. So that is. Then you get the second question, Shafat, these people coming, foreign nationals, they come there, they make money, and then you get all the mafia, and they don't pay anything, they're sending all the money there, and the looting takes place between them, foreign nationals as well. There is a problem there. But that you get in every country, Shafat, there's nothing you can do there. But my take is always, if you got a foreign national here, make sure he's registered, he's done his paperwork properly, and he's paying his rates and taxes, and he's paying the government. Because you can't come here in a country and loot the country and send everything back to your homeland, and you're not giving anything back. Because the infrastructure has, also we must understand, Shafar, the infrastructure that is ailing at the moment is due to thousands and thousands of foreign nationals a year. So that infrastructure, we haven't We haven't accounted for that. The people from the rural area are now in the city. So that also is impacting on all our infrastructure as well, Shifan.
Ahmad, I can tell you a really great morning in your company, and alhamdulillah, you know, you man, a man of action. Hey, you know what I mean? You're really full of action. Here, there, everywhere, wherever there's something happening, you'll find Ahmad Parak, the counselor Ahmad Parak. Ahmad, your parting words this morning?
Shabbat, you know, we must, you know, far as possible, don't moan, groan, and cry and say, this is not done. We all know that. End of the day, the long and the short, where we are in South Africa, there is no better country in the world than South Africa. I've, you know, with the help of Allah, I've been to some of the countries, and I've seen for myself, and European countries I've seen. I've seen in the Middle East countries and all that. What we have here, all right, they might be have law and order. Yeah, we might not have law and order, but yeah, we got deen, we got everything. Our constitution gives you the right of religion, right of culture. You know, we must make shukr and carry on. And now get together, let's put our act together and say, let's vote for a party, vote for the right person to come in government, and then we will make it better for everyone, for the people of South Africa. That's what we're saying, Shafat.
Jazakallah, Ahmad. You have a, mashallah, beautiful day ahead. Inshallah, we'll talk to you soon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa
rahmatullahi. The voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.